This is an interview with Professor G.L. Schoberg, emeritus and longtime professor of German and French and head of the department at Concordia College, Moorhead. This is part of the 1984-85 Oral History Project of the Minnesota State University Heritage Education Commission and the Northwest Minnesota Historical Center at Moorhead State University. As a volunteer interviewer, I am J.L. Rendell, Emeritus Vice President of Concordia College, Moorhead, Minnesota. The time is 10:30 a.m., Thursday, May 2nd, 1985. The place is the Rendell Residence in Moorhead. The oral history agreement has been signed, giving ownership of this recording and contents to the Northwest Historical Center at Moorhead State University. And now for the record, will you give your full name and address, date and place of birth, names of your parents, and other biographical data?
My full name is Gustav L. Schoberg. I was born at Atwater, Minnesota in 1899, and grew up there until I was about 15 years old when my parents moved to Fargo, where my father became the pastor of the Elam Lutheran Church. And after finishing high school in 1917 in Fargo, I worked for 2 or 3 years in a music store, and then decided I was going to come to Concordia College, where I did come, and took the 4 years there, graduating from the college in 1925.
And then you came, after you graduated, would you summarize your career at Concordia and wherever else?
Yes, after graduating, I went to Fisher, Minnesota, which is up by Crookston, and was finally the superintendent of schools at that place. And then I left there in 1928 and 29, and went to the University of Minnesota at Minneapolis-St. Paul, and kept working there for a couple of 3 years until I got a master's degree in 1934. At that time, I'd already come back to Concordia as a teacher. I'd been there a couple of years, and was busy teaching German and French at Concordia College.
Now, you had a lot of other duties, too, besides teaching German and French. Would you summarize those for us?
Well, there are a lot of things that happened in those earlier days that they have special people for today. I used to go out a lot on the road and interview students for the college. Spent many days and weekends and summers doing that. And then as I was also doing work in the publicity of the college, writing articles for the newspapers, and for, I would say, about 10 years I was on the radio giving a summary after every chapel exercise. So I was kept pretty busy on that.
You had a slogan to close your radio broadcast that became so well known. What was that?
That was Concordially Yours.
Who was the president, and what was your relationship to the president's office at that time?
The president at that time was J.N. Brown, and he left there about the same, I don't remember just what year that was.
That he left?
Yeah.
51.
In 1951. And I continued on teaching there under President Knudsen until my time of retirement, which was in 1970.
So you were on the staff for over a spread of 40 years.
That's right, 40 years.
1930 to 1970. Yeah. That's very interesting. Now, we don't have very much access to people who were teaching at the college as early as 1930. Would you tell us about your first year at Concordia, 30-31? What it was like, what the school was like, what your classes were like, what kind of students, and your personal experience the very first year.
It was a simple academic structure at that time. Students came mostly Norwegian Lutheran kids from the area right around here, but gradually it became a little more cosmopolitan, so that we began to have people without Norwegian names. And
you remember your first day on the job?
Yes, I can remember the first day. We had faculty meeting after classes, and the first thing we were told was that our salaries were being cut for the next year.
What was the size of the faculty at that time?
Oh, I would say that the size of the faculty at that time was maybe about 30, 31 in there. Quite different from today.
Now, how did you happen to get the outside public relations type assignments?
I don't know, but what the fact was that I was maybe the youngest of the faculty members. Quite a few of them were older gentlemen and ladies, and they couldn't get away quite as easily as I could.
Going back to the time that you were a student, to talk about that a little bit, would you comment on some of the teachers, some of the professors who were active there in the early 20s during the 4 years you were a student?
Names?
Yeah.
Well, I can remember Professor Nordley, Professor Bali, and quite a number of the others, but some of it escapes me at the moment.
Going back to your early teaching years, the 30s, of course, are known as the years of the Depression. How did the Depression affect you as a young teacher at Concordia?
Well, we got our salaries cut 2 years in succession, I can remember that, and after that, the salary was considered rather low, even for those times. We lived in a house owned by the college, and part of my salary was paid by letting me live in the house.
Does that house still exist?
No, that's been torn down some years ago.
What effect did the Depression have on the students, for example? Was any special provision made for helping them to get jobs or helping to finance their education?
No, I don't think so, not in the modern sense at all.
You had quite a lot to do with fundraising over a long period of time. Would you tell us something about that?
Yes, I can remember them setting up an office in one of the college buildings and going back and forth between towns and making fundraising appeals, usually meeting it with a pastor in his own home, and then going to meetings arranged by him for meeting with members of the congregation. That was usually the way it was done.
Usually this is in the form of campaigns, that is, a campaign for this and for that. Now, there was an endowment campaign in 1926. I suppose that was finished, though, by the time you were a student.
Yes, it was.
By the time you were a faculty member.
Yes.
Do you recall specific campaigns that you were working with?
No, it was one constant run of that.
Constant.
Yes, sir.
That's interesting. Now, Fjellsted Hall was built in the 30s and during the Depression, and so you probably had quite a lot to do with raising some money for that.
Not especially for that, I wouldn't say.
Yes. Was that a different campaign?
That was done by some other. I can remember seeing men sitting in an office that the school had hired, and they were working with that campaign, but I had nothing to do with that.
Yes, I see. Your fundraising was more for the current funds than for each year. And now, concerning publicity, public relations, and outreach, actually, a lot of that was done, and you were right in the middle of it, weren't you?
Yes, I'll have to admit I was.
Can you tell some of the things that you were involved in there?
in the fundraising?
Publicity and public relations.
Well, I can't say I remember anything special except going down to the old Morehead News and putting articles in the paper and so on.
You were in charge of the news going out from the college.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And now, in connection with the radio, weren't there some Christmas radio parties that were pretty well known?
Yes, I can remember a number of them. I can remember having Christmas radio parties in the old gym. And finally, we ended up at the WDAY over in Fargo with a radio Christmas party, even in around their studios, and everybody speaking Christmas greetings to the microphone, to the people at large.
Now, were these Christmas parties for the students, or were they during vacation, and were they for alumni?
Usually just for the students.
I see. Faculty, maybe? Some?
Yes, some would come, I suppose.
That's interesting. Now, during the 30s, during the Depression, some rather surprising things were happening there at the college. For example, a band went to the World's Fair. Nordley sent a history tour to Europe, and Fjellsted Hall was built, and so on. Evidently, Depression period was not all gloom and doom.
No, there was a certain struggle for activity that you remember very well from that day. Now things are taken for granted, and you just expect the money to come rolling in. Those days you counted every dollar.
You were working under President Brown, and he was the president through that whole Depression period. Have any comments on his work and his administration?
I think he was a very sincere and dedicated person, working hard and fighting his way through with a very difficult financial system.
As we draw near the end of the 30s, and the country's getting ready for war, and we start with the draft, and then after a while we're in the war, what effect did World War II have on you and your work and the college?
Well, we just kept on struggling our way through. I can't remember anything specific about it, except that the student body became rather small. It was mostly girls rather than men.
As I recall, the enrollment really stayed remarkably constant, although you lost all the men, which means that the number of women must have just about doubled.
That's right. I can still see from the chapel platform how the audience was made up mostly of girls.
And that suggests to me that the strength of the college must have been moving forward. I mean, if the enrollment of women doubled during the war, it means that the place was growing and developing.
That's right.
And it wasn't anybody's particular fault that the men weren't there. They were somewhere else.
Yes.
Did you find student recruiting more difficult during the war?
Yes, quite a bit more. In fact, I can easily remember coming to certain homes and interviewing the young man that was thought of for college there and finding that he was going off to war.
Wasn't the college involved in some military companies on campus?
Yes, what we call the old library, I don't remember just what they call it now, was used as a sort of a dormitory for soldiers. We saw them on the campus quite constantly there for quite a while. That, however, didn't last too long, as I remember.
Did that introduce any new problems?
No, I don't think so.
Then we come to the period after the war, and what are your recollections of how that influenced you and your work?
Well, I'd only could say that the teaching of German had taken a little beating because of the war, but we put it back in again after stressing French for quite a while, and everything went rather smoothly through all these following years. I wasn't doing any recruiting or anything then, or publicity, except at the end of chapel programs I would have a little radio talk.
You made an interesting comment there about the popularity of German during the war. And as a student and teacher of German, could you summarize for the benefit of the transcriber of our film here, the effect of World War I, probably, and also World War II on languages, teaching of languages?
Well, I can't remember anything of World War I.
Thinking of other world events and how they affect college education, college teaching, and your work at Concordia, what effect did Sputnik have?
I can remember in a faculty meeting hearing about Sputnik, and the faculty was rather concerned and chagrined that we weren't the first ones, but that the Russians beat us to it. I can just remember that.
And as a result, work in sciences and mathematics and so on was speeded up greatly. Now, the popularity of languages, as you mentioned, during World War II, German wasn't so popular for a while, and they were studying French, and that came back again afterwards. Has the teaching of languages always been equally popular, or have there been high periods and low periods in popularity of language?
Yes, high periods and low periods. I can remember during the last part of the war that we put in Spanish to make up for the German that was being lost. That was quite noticeable.
What about the popularity of languages at the present time?
Well, that is the big thing now. In the language department, they have usually about 4 to 5 people in each of the 3 languages, where I did all of them at one time myself.
What effect have the language camps had on languages on the campus or in general?
Quite a strong effect, I think. I can remember hearing, of course this was after my time pretty much, hearing about the people going to the language camps in order just to be able to get into the college and study languages during the winter time. But that would be a little later than my day.
The summer study seminars in Europe are a later development. What effect have they had on the language department?
Well, I can't say much about that either, because that came after my time. I can remember studying over there myself and meeting some Concordia students in Germany who were studying.
Going back to another sort of nationwide influence, that was the period of student revolts, and following the Vietnam War during the 60s and probably even into the 70s. What effect did that have on colleges?
Well, I can remember certain marches of protest in almost the modern style, but it wasn't particularly noticeable. You could see students sitting about on the campus in sort of defiant attitudes once in a while.
So that it didn't affect the Concordia campus too strongly. Now, what about some of these changes in the climate, minority rights, for example, you know, black rights, and the enrollment of black students at the college and other minority students, what effect did that have on your teaching?
That wasn't anything that occurred during my time. I can't remember any minority people at all. We didn't have any blacks, and we didn't have any Hispanics. It was still pretty much from the local area around here.
Yeah. Did you notice the effects of federal and state involvement in education, in either aids to education or in any controls?
No, I'd say I had nothing to offer there. I wasn't in on anything like that.
What would you consider your most outstanding contribution to the college, to teaching, to the language departments, and so on?
I often think back to it and remember the difficulty, for instance, of putting in Spanish in place of German during the war, and that that was quite a transition.
Were there any particular campaigns or efforts, changes that you were promoting during your career that you'd want to comment on?
No, I don't think so.
And how would you compare or contrast the language departments, for example, as you left them or today, with the language department of the time when you were a student, for example?
Oh, back in those days, I can remember even taking German in classes when I was a student at Concordia. It was usually straight grammar and translation of certain passages, whereas now they go in for using the language in as a spoken language, pretty much, and very little is done with grammar in the old sense.
The difference in the size of the organization, you know, the number of teachers and number of students, I presume that doesn't change the fundamental problem of teaching a language.
No, I wouldn't say it was.
A few students and one teacher can do the same job
yes.
as 1,000 students and...
you just have to have quite a few more teachers and different types of language presentation.
What about your status in retirement? Is it a satisfactory status?
I think Concordia has treated us very nicely. We've never had any trouble with anything. The retirement benefits come automatically every month, and one still has a chance to go over on the campus and be along with all kinds of entertainments and dinners and Christmas parties and all the rest.
Well, that's an encouraging statement. Would you advise young people to go into education?
Yes, I understand from what I hear from people around me that it's becoming quite a thing now to go into, especially certain fields. I can't just remember what they'd be.
Would you advise young people to go into language teaching on the college level, similar to your work?
Well, yes, I think that's something, of course, I would be very much interested in having them go in for. I sometimes think that they should put a little more stress on the grammatical side than they do, but that was their decisions.
Are you still, during your retirement, what have been your activities?
Well, pretty much watching what's going on the campus from across the cemetery near where we live, and wishing that the old days were back again, but they won't be back.
Now, you've been involved in various hobbies, both when you were active as a teacher and in your retirement?
My retirement hobby has been woodworking, making of wooden furniture and articles, and taking care of the house and the yard, and that's been about what it's been.
What are some of your favorite articles of furniture that you probably still have them in your house?
Well, I can remember making certain chairs, and it's mostly things to have on tables, like bookends and things like that that I went in for.
Yeah, what changes would you like to see in education today? Now that's a broad subject, so you have a lot of room there. Do you want to go out on the limb and make some suggestions?
I don't think I dare to say much about that.
How would you contrast the job problems of the head of department today, or when you left, for example, with the job problems of the head of the department early in your career?
Job problems?
Yeah, being head of a department.
The difficulties of the duties of
the
department?
Yeah, whatever that involves.
I think that it's rather better organized now. I know my son-in-law, who's teaching over at the college, is talking constantly about departmental meetings where the faculty get together and resolve all the problems.
In your early experience, you were the whole department?
That's right. So we'd have assistants that would come and go, but usually they'd stay for a year or so.
Now, your wife has been teaching in languages. Would you tell us something about her connection with Concordia and what she has been teaching?
Well, that was just for some time that she was teaching certain classes in Norwegian over at the college and helping out over there. And I believe she did help out a little in German, too, for a while.
Did she handle most or all of the Norwegian at one time, probably?
No, I think she was just assisting Martha Brennan in some of those ones.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. During the Depression, when you were traveling for the college, raising money, recruiting students, doing public relations work in the congregation, do you have any stories there of Depression life?
Well, how's this for Depression life? Going out and looking for students, I'd have to use President Brown's own car because there was no other car at the college. I'd sometimes sleep in a public park overnight because there was no one that I knew that I could even move in on for the night. So usually I'd spend the time at some pastor's residence and they'd provide the food and the lodging.
You slept in what, in the back seat of the car then?
Yes, I think so. Just rested a while, that's about all I could do.
Now, when you were making these tours into the area, were you preaching Sundays and giving talks? Was it mostly individual conferences?
Mostly individual conferences. I come home practically every weekend, I knew.
And you used the president's car.
That's right.
And in the meantime, then, what were you paying for gasoline?
I don't remember just what it was, but I'm sure it wasn't more than 10 or 15 cents a gallon, was it?
Something like that. And I suppose you'd be eating in the restaurants then.
Yes.
And what did it cost you for a meal?
I think sometimes you got by for 35, 40 cents.
So a day's expenses were not particularly high.
That's right.
Now, this work, would that be done over the weekend or in the evening after your classes? You were teaching full load, weren't you?
Yes, so this was mostly done over weekends and summer, but not during the teaching days, of course.
Oh, yes. You had full summer employment pretty regularly then.
That's right.
And what about sabbaticals?
Well, there was no such a thing that I knew of at that time.
And what about vacations? You gave yourself a little vacation.
Yes. A couple of summers I even went to Germany to study. But
tell us about that. That's interesting.
Went to Heidelberg University at Heidelberg, and I can remember the attitude was not always friendly to Americans at that time either.
This was when? Before World War II?
Yes, about, well, I'd say it was around in the 30s.
Yes. Not entirely friendly.
I can remember some people sort of going after me because I was an American, but usually they were pretty nice.
And how did your summers in Germany relate to your teaching German?
They helped quite a lot, because there's nothing like being right with the Germans when you want to talk with their language, and you get certain attitudes toward it, accents I'd call it, that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Would any of the students, of your students, be traveling in Germany or traveling in Europe during the summer, during those years?
No, I can't think of anyone that ever did.
There wasn't that kind of money in circulation, no. I suppose, during the 30s. Now, in this area, an agricultural area like this, the Depression actually hit in the 20s. That is, the bank closings were in the 20s.
Yeah.
Did you feel the effects of a depression during your school days in the 20s?
Well, during that time, of course, I was living at home in the 20s, going to Concordia, for instance, as a student, and
It didn't particularly influence,
but I used to have to walk over, I remember, from Fargo to Moorhead, rather than even take the streetcar.
Streetcar. I haven't seen the streetcar. You mean there were streetcars?
Yes, didn't you know that?
Well, I think I did, but describe them.
Oh, I can remember seeing those yellow things, they go hippity-hopping along on the rails. I don't see how they ever stayed on them without coming off.
Did those tracks go near Concordia?
Yes, they'd come up 6th Street from the north, and they'd turn west right about where the old gymnasium is today, the art barn again.